This is To The Point. A Rhino Experience. Voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts. Cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It is your boy, Cristiano, and I am live at ACCA Conference 2022 in St. Louis. Hey, Ken, do you know what you call St. Louis? Like what the boys call St. Louis, what the cool kids call St. Louis? You know what the nickname for it is?
I don't know. SLT?
STL.
Oh, STL.
No, it's the Lou.
Why?
The
oh,
Lou.
The Lou.
It's the Lou. The murder capital of the world. Don't you feel safe?
Hello.
Well, if you can't tell by now, I have a guest co-host with me, and that is Mr. Ken Goodrich. KG, welcome back to the To The Point podcast, brother.
What's up?
What's up? And we also have a guest that we were with, I guess it would have been early last month at Rhino X, and that'd be Brian Sloan. And Brian Sloan is the, what is your official title? Are you El Presidente?
You know what? That's a really good, I'm pretty much everyone's whipping boy, it seems like. Okay. Right? I don't even know if I should say that, but I'm the president, but everyone kind of bosses me around anyways.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. From T.R. Miller. And they are actually, so you're, are you technically in Plainfield, Illinois?
Nailed it. Yeah. Right in Plainfield.
So the southwest suburbs of Chi-Town, Chicago.
Oh yeah.
Got it.
The second murder capital.
The second murder capital of the world.
Yeah, it's up there.
Is that real?
It's up there.
Jeez. Okay. Well, hey, welcome, man. I'm glad to have you on here. It was good to spend some time with you at Rhino X and learn a bit about the business. And I just thought it was your story is probably going to be really intriguing to a lot of our listeners. They can relate to a lot of it too. And I thought what makes it even better is when you bring on Ken to the podcast to kind of throw in his two cents, you know, at will.
My color.
Exactly.
My color, if you will.
The color commentator. It's just sometimes super colorful.
Well, I look forward to it. Appreciate you guys being here too and giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, so. I mean, of course. This is a third generation company, right?
Technically, second generation. But my great grandpa was in the trades.
Okay, so you're third generation family.
Fourth, really? fourth. My great grandpa was in distribution. My grandpa was in distribution for heating and cooling, and my dad got on the contracting side.
And so you had no choice.
Not at all.
Yeah. Well, why don't we do this? Let's go ahead and just kind of let our listeners know a little bit of how you got into the trades, all the way up to like where you're at today. I mean, and kind of what you have built, because I think it's been pretty amazing in a short amount of time.
Awesome, man. Yeah. So I guess it technically started when me and my brother were maybe 10 years old. I remember every Saturday and Sunday waking up to my dad remodeling the house, circular saws going, and 2008 came around. He worked for new construction companies, and the owner asked if he wanted to buy his customer care. And so my dad started the business. He kind of recruited me. I was going to college at the time. He kind of recruited me to come work for him. I saw a great opportunity there. So I started off doing deliveries is where I started. Started off doing deliveries. We did a lot of new construction and worked my way through fabrication, installs, a little bit of service, sales, project management, and then in 2016, my parents actually separated. So they both kind of exited the business. My mom hard exited, and then my dad was he was running sales calls from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., and it really just forced me and my brother to kind of get more involved in the business and really take over operations.
When was that?
2016.
2016?
Yep.
Okay, so 2016, you and your brother are now going, what, full?
Yeah, so in 2016, when my dad bought the business in 2008, we did $2.8 million that first year. To give some perspective, revenues actually declined over the next, let's say, 10 years. So 2016, 8 years, they declined. We did about $2.4-ish million, had about 11 employees.
And that was in the residential new construction business?
Everything. So a lot of heating and cooling companies we started off as residential, light commercial, new construction. In 2016, we did a little bit of everything. Yeah, we slowly got out of new construction from 08 to 16, but we were still pretty involved, probably $500,000 to $1 million in new construction at that time.
And was that tract houses or custom or commercial or all of the above?
It was whatever we can make money doing.
Okay.
Well, not make money doing, but top line dollars.
Yeah, you know, revenue.
Yeah, revenue.
Yeah.
So.
Trailer parks?
We close. Yeah.
Little trailer parks need some love too. Hey,
they do
need service too. So, okay. So take me to, past 2016, like what's going on? Like,
yeah. So 2016, got more involved, got educated a little bit, I guess I say. So educated as in I went to ACA forums and started doing some reading.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, joined some best practice groups. And then this year we are budgeted $23.5 million and we're pacing 25.
Not a boy.
Yep.
So,
wow. Thanks. Incredible. Yeah. Great job.
Nice. Appreciate work. It. Thank you.
Got to spend some time with you guys out at Rhino X, and then we went to the Open. So we got to know each other a little bit.
Yes.
And you guys got to hang out with President Rhino, Mike, in Chicago.
We did, yes.
He invited you guys out on a night out on the town, didn't he? Something like that?
Yeah, we had fun. Let's say that. Yes, it was good.
Damn it.
We only really hung out for about a couple hours, but... there's just so many people down there, you kind of just get sidetracked.
Yeah, it was a lot of people. I
heard. There was, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we're going to call it.
But I heard you guys had a good time.
Yes.
Well, so listen, congratulations like on all the, you know, like the success of the business. And I know that one thing that I appreciated that you did is like even after Rhino X is when you went back, you went and implemented some of the things that you learned. Like, what were some of those things that you took away from Rhino X that you, like we were just talking about a pre-podcast that you were telling Ken, that you went back and implemented to try and help, you know, move the business forward even more?
Yeah, I think for us specifically, and I don't know if this resonates with other businesses, but for us, the last 2 years with COVID has really been about product fulfillment. So like, how can we get this product to, you know, do all the other sectors that we need to do? And so we kind of lost track on what we were paying our vendors. So, you know, like Fool, yes, we definitely implement, I don't know how much I want to say, but I'll just say it. We're pretty open book. We like Fools would pay with check. You know, we were really, we just pay all of our materials with check. Every Friday we do check releases. We still do that today, but some things we're going to start to implement or have moved forward on is using credit cards. And not so that we can go on awesome trips and use it to buy cool things like sweet cars, but you really use it to decrease our marketing, or not our marketing, but our material expense. So using, you know, we partnered with a credit card where we'll get 2% rebate on our purchases. So using that as a tool to help decrease our material costs or equipment costs.
Nice. I use my Amex for everything. Because then I fly basically for free. All those flights, the last 7 weeks.
Decreasing that travel expense.
Decreased my travel expense significantly. Thank you, American Express. This podcast is not sponsored by American Express. So you guys you're starting to have a little bit of success. You got a good game plan in place. You're doing all the right things. You're going to conferences. You're beating the people. You're implementing the things that you're learning. Was there like, maybe this hasn't even happened yet, but is there like a moment when things like just started to like click for you, or you think you're still like trying to find that moment? Like, is it feel like I get it? I understand how to scale this thing. Are you there yet?
Yeah. It's hard because I don't want to act like I know, because then I'm sure I'll make a mistake here in the future. I'm like, crap, mess that up. I don't think there's a pivotal moment of where I've learned things. And I say that because of our hyper growth. And so what I know today is what I know on how to run maybe a 15, 10, 5, $2.5 million company. But each year that we continue to grow, because we've averaged 40 to 60% growth year over year. So as we continue to grow, I need to be here at ACA or other conferences and continue to educate myself, not only what's going on in our trade, but what's going on outside of our trade, because it influences, you know, the construction industry, I'll say. So I don't think there's a single pivotal moment. I think the greatest thing I learned was to know our numbers both at the financial level and at the operational level.
Got it.
Yep. I hope that helps.
And what niche did you settle into?
Yeah, we totally missed that. So we're 100% residential replacement and service.
Wow. You transformed the whole business from smorgasbord, everything, yep, to 100%, and grew that fast at the same time.
Yeah, and we didn't do it overnight. We said if we could do A, then we'll eliminate B. And what I mean by that is we still had to supplement that income somehow, or that revenue somehow. So once we got, like, we said we'd be 100% done with new construction if we added the line of service of plumbing. because we could, you know, we could generate revenue out of plumbing. We just didn't drop it cold turkey, even though we probably should have dropped it cold turkey once we realized how much money we were losing or the opportunity that we were losing too. So, yeah, great question.
So what, you don't want to continue with plumbing?
No, I love plumbing. Yeah, our first year of plumbing, last year was our first full year of plumbing. We did $2.5 million. We budgeted $5 million this year. So plumbing's been a great extension to our service lines.
Got it.
You know how I got our plumbing business up to $6 million sales? I just said anything less than $500,000 a month in plumbing is just a hobby. And I continue to drill that into my manager's head until they got past the hobby stage.
I love that. I'm going to incorporate that in our sewer department.
Anything less than $1 million a month in sewer is
a hobby.
Just a hobby.
I love that.
Lesson learned.
I'm stealing it.
Now, you said kind of like that 2.5 to 5 to 10 to like 15, like those marks. Were there some like, is there anything in there that stands out to you that was like a real like learning moment for you? Like, oh man, I've been making this mistake the whole time. Like, was there something in that gap where that stands out to you that, you know, that you caught and fixed and was able to?
Yeah, I'll take that two directions. So I'll take it as the most important lesson learned that I think Kent actually spoke a lot about today, that I learned is taking, you know, one of your, because my first, I'd have to imagine as a company grows, the first general manager, like the first manager they're going to put on their team outside of themselves is a service manager. And so a great mistake I made that, I wouldn't even say it was a mistake. There was so much learning opportunity there, was taking my service manager and making him, or I'm a service technician, and make him a service manager. But it was so great for me. And he was a little older than I was. It was amazing, amazing lessons learned there were just how to coach and manage. I guess that was my first experience of coaching and managing. And it was a challenging coaching and managing experience.
And how did that one end up?
Well, he no longer works for us. Yeah, and it sucks because, I mean, those hurt, right? That one hurt when you have
You get double damage, right? You took a good guy out of the field and he failed at the other role and he's bitter when he leaves, you know, it's a bad, bad move. And we all do it. I certainly have done it way too much. And I've certainly done it way too much in the near term, you know? So be very, very careful in your selections when you're promoting from within, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the common one, I would say, for sure. And I think maybe it's a good lesson to be learned there. There's a lot of value there. But outside of that, I would say unique to that, I guess my own learning, or not my own management ability is just, I'm still learning when to push and when to pull, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I'm learning when to be assertive and when not to be assertive, and still like learning that balance of, and I don't know if it's specific for each person that you manage, if there's a different threshold, but I'm still learning the push and pull.
Got it. So I say this all the time that I'm a pretty poor manager of people. That's the truth. I'm not good at managing people. I don't try and like fake that I am. I say it pretty right up front. Do I not say that, Ryan? Right up front? I say it right up front. Yeah, I'm not a good manager of people. But I say that because I care enough that I want them to have good leadership. And I know like a good manager is somebody who can, you know, hold them accountable to different things, push them. And like all these, I don't have that ability. I have ADHD. So let's just blame that. but at least I'm self-aware enough to know what I'm not good at. I've gotten better at it. But something I'm not great at. So I try to put somebody else, you know, in place that can do those things effectively. But you started to talk about how you're trying to educate yourself to become better at these things, like with the push and the pull. You're actively going and sitting in these meetings and like coming to Rhino X and taking notes and learning and then going back and implementing, which is like the full circle phase of this whole thing. So I'm assuming that you have some sort of like educational stuff in place for your own staff, like something like that you're pushing them to do. What is it that you're doing like for yourself to kind of hold yourself accountable? Like, what is it that you're doing to fix that problem? And is it that problem? Is that the problem you're trying to fix for yourself? Is that like your main BHAG at the moment is I got to figure out how to make myself a better manager or leader?
Yeah, great question. So it's funny. I think I have undiagnosed ADHD. And my girlfriend's in the medical field, and she tells me that. So I can relate to that. It's like 9 o'clock at night, and I'm...
Squirrel!
Yeah, totally, all day. But a few cool, unique things that we're doing is we have three leadership levels at our shop. So leadership level one is, you know, staff that we want to take from a frontline position that maybe they move to, like, a frontline supervisor. So we meet biweekly, and we do things like disc profiling, color codes, and we try to tackle two books. So extreme ownership is one, and then the five dysfunctions of a team. And then we do
Wait, you never read the E-Myth?
Oh, it's on the docket. Don't worry. Yeah, that's really just about learning more about yourselves and how you communicate. So really just that's what we're focused on.
Got it.
Yeah, level three is where we drop the E-Myth. Yeah.
I just wanted to bust your chops. I thought Cam was going to chime in on that one, but maybe I beat you to it.
I got to tell you, though, think about this one. You got a $25 million business. I assume it's profitable, right? So you're at a crossroads. You want to educate yourself to be a better leader to help grow the business. Or you can go and find a very qualified, very tenured guy with a track record who can take that business and 10X it again for you, and you're the shareholder, and you drive it like a business, you know, like a, you know, brilliant business guy who takes people and puts talent in and lets them grow businesses for them, and they go off and do other things. So I just want to make sure you understand, you know, I've seen that happen in our industry several times. Like several times I've seen guys who have got the business to a certain level of scale, decided I'm not going to put in the time and effort it takes for me to educate myself. I'm concerned that that period of time that the business may unravel a bit, or I'm not up for the game, or I just don't want to. And they go out and they put talent in place in the business, and that thing thrives and sends them $5 million a year mailbox money, whether they show up or not. That's a pretty good life.
It is. Yeah. It's a great life, but it's not where I'm at in my life. You know, like I just like the challenge. Like it's really not, what book am I reading now? I'm struggling to think of it, but there's no winners and losers. Like right now, I just enjoy the challenge. I just like waking up, you know, going, doing the challenge. It's not about the financial, and it never was about the financial. I lived in an $80,000 house up till last year. But you're right, there's a lot of value in finding the right people and putting them in the right seats. And we did that most recently. So we've restructured a little bit with our management team. So we have like our frontline managers, our midline managers, and then we're starting to look at the, like, you know, upper management or the C or the executive team, however you want to phrase it. And that's what we did on with one of our mid-management level positions is we looked outside the industry. We found a gentleman who was overseeing about $300 million in, I'll call it, service revenue. It's not our industry, but like our industry. And we plugged him into that position because there's so much talent that he can bring to teach us, my brother, and some other members. We can all grow from being around him.
We were just talking about this exact same thing. You had mentioned, because you have, well, you had like five or six guys here that were from outside the industry, right?
Yeah, something most like of our management staff is not from the industry, and it's by design, by purpose. I have a couple, but it's not the norm. Because look, it's the same scenario as what you describe, right? How many guys have got to a place where they can run a $50 million, $100 million branch and do it effectively in our industry? I mean, there's not a lot of us out here, right? I can't. So, you know, you're looking for a needle in a haystack, first of all. And second of all, you know, you do need to consider this crossroads you're at. I know you want to do it. You want to try. You want to do it. You want to learn. You want to grow. And it's not about the money, but it is about the money. And think long and hard about that. You've got it to a critical point, a critical mass where you could afford some really solid talent and put in place. And I'm not saying it'll be an autopilot, but you can just adjust it here and there. And then you could create the goose that lays the golden eggs for you. And then you can go out and learn all kinds of things you want. You can go back and get your MBA, your doctorate in business if you want to, right? And then you can come back in if you want to. But, you know, ask yourself this. would you hire you? So if you're at this crossroads now, you say, okay, I'm going to get the resume from this guy who worked with his dad and he did all these things and he had residential new construction. Then he did this, this, and this. And this biggest business he ever has run is $25 million. Would you hire that guy to run that asset?
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, Housecall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads. Capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
Just on resume only.
It depends on how big the asset is.
No, it's your $25 million business.
Probably not, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So think about that. So, you know, you are the, you know, you're the key guy of the company and you have a lunatic for a boss.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's my head.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm in for the game. I was in it for the game and I've kept doing exactly what you're saying and that you're going to do. And I have accomplished some of those things. But I will say, sometimes I look back and say, wonder what it would have been like if I would have stopped here, got a management team and sat back and let that thing throw me off $5 million a year without me ever showing up. There's a value into that too.
For sure. And I forget, we were talking about it earlier. It was your business is your school. What was that phrase? I think you used it earlier on stage.
Your business is a school for your employees.
And I also look at it as a school for myself with that. I kind of look at myself as a W-2 employee too. Pay myself like I'm a W-2 employee because I'm trying to learn too. And that's it was really interesting. You were talking about, it's kind of the law of the lid, but is it the Peter principle? Mm-hmm. Did I say that right? What are the early signs that you're at your Peter principle moment? Like, what does that look like? Because that's kind of what we're talking about here too, is what is my lid, as my role, and how can you continue to grow your lid, or what might be early signs? Because I don't think the early signs are a slippage in growth. I don't know if it's, I mean, in your experience, I guess, what would you say the signs of someone that's tapping on the Peter principle?
Well, the obvious thing is you're not hitting your plan, right? You're not executing on the plan, number one. Number two, your key people are falling off. There's turnover there, or there's high turnover inside of the organization. You know, everybody deserves to have a great manager, right? Every one of your team members deserves to have somebody that supports them and teaches them and holds them accountable and keeps them in the right place. And people want that. They don't say they want it, but they want it and they thrive better in that operation. So, you know, at the extent that you can't be that person or you're not being that person, that's where you need to look inward and say, do I need to hire for my weakness and get that in place? Or do I need to move aside? I mean, you know, in this last presentation I just did, I mean, we're rolling up a little over $200 million in sales. And while my ego doesn't say that I'm unprepared for the next move, I think about it. Am I prepared for this? Am I ready for this challenge? What does this new scale look like? What is my org chart going to look like? What do I have to be prepared to do and the skills I need to know and be able to execute on that will drive the plan? And there's going to be a point, and I know it will come up where I will have Peter principled out. For sure. So, but the great thing is I've created a great business with great cash flows, and I own a big chunk of it, and they can send me checks.
Yeah, and that made me think, too, is I remember thinking about this a year ago, and I'm glad you brought it up. It made me reflect on it, is that, as you continue to grow, you have to develop yourself, but you change. You start to change. Like, your thought process changes, the way you communicate changes. And pain, with pain comes, or with growth comes, has come pain, if that makes sense. Yep. It's not easy to grow. It's painful, but you have to be vulnerable and open and willing to learn.
So you said you're going to try and finish this year roughly, what was like 25, something like that?
Yeah, 25. Yeah, 25. That's the goal.
You're talking like, I'm not ready. I'm having fun learning and all the normal shit that we hear people say all the time at that phase. But I get it, because I am enjoying the building part of it as well in our business. We're similar. Do you have something in mind that's like, this is where I'd like to go? Is that even a thought? Like, is there a number that you're like, okay, now's when I'll make that, like, I'll start thinking about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I'll answer it two ways. Okay. The first way would be is I want to develop the people around me. I want to make sure that my team members, they have, they're financially secure. They've got great jobs. They've personally and professionally developed. So that's super important to me. And then the second thing from like a financial revenue standpoint would, I'm pretty open with it. My goal is 100 million. So that's my goal. From a revenue standpoint, but also it's more important for me to build my team up around me. And it's important for me to make sure they're financially secure and professionally and personally developed.
Hey, do you remember?
So what happens then? 100 million?
I don't know. I'll tell you in 6 years, 7 years, whatever it is. Who knows?
Because it's a treadmill, right? So I just executed the biggest deal of my career, and I'm thinking, and it was a long, long-term goal, and I got it done. And then a few weeks later, I'm thinking, man, I could have done that better. I could have drove it up higher, and I just kind of get back in the game again. So it's a trap sometimes too. You get addicted to the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I just want to take care of our people. Like, some cool things we're doing is, cause I want to educate our frontline employees. Like, I don't want to be known as like butt crack Bob, like I want to like make our teams, educated, sophisticated. So like each month we do monthly team meetings. It's not really about the ROI for us on this, but like we do 401k continuing education twice a year in our monthly all staff. We do mortgage, what's happening in the mortgage housing, space. Cause I want technicians as they join us at 22 from a trade school or 21, whatever age they're at, to say, all right, I want to start thinking about buying a house. I don't want them saying like, hey, I'm going to go to the bar and, buy a bunch of drinks tonight. I want them to think, all right, I need to start saving money because I need to put it in my 401k and buy a house. So I want to help shape, our frontline team too. So.
All right. Hey, did you hear when Geiger said, we asked him at Rhino X, or somebody asked at Rhino X, they said, hey, what was, if you could have done one thing different, if you could have done one thing different, what would it have been? Do you remember what his answer was?
Yeah, I remember asking a follow-up question on that. He said he would have done it faster.
He would have done it faster, but yeah. Then what was the follow-up question?
I think I asked him, what did faster look like?
What did he say?
He said that he would have found the right partners. Well, I don't want to paraphrase him. I think this is what he said. What he might have said and what I heard are two different things.
What did you think you heard?
What I heard I need to do is look at maybe going... And it's hard, right? Because we're at 40 to 60% year over year. And when he's saying go faster, I'm like, crap. I don't know if faster is the right answer for us. I think there's different things. But some things that we're looking to explore specific to our business, and I don't know about other businesses, is you can look at outside investment opportunities where they come in, they help you, they educate you. But he also was talking about, acquisition, M&A opportunities or greenfielding opportunities. So those are things where since then we've been actively looking at as well.
Yeah. We were just talking about like the window, and referencing like, when does this window close? I don't know. Ken has a better pulse on that than I do. When I hear Ken like push on you a little bit about this, what it makes me think of is, you're in a great spot and you have some great options. And if it is the building part that you like, you can still continue to build, but in a different position. Like, so you can still do those things. There's a lot, you actually have a lot in your court. Like, that's what I'm excited for you about, is that, you know, I think I've heard this story, like, kind of like this, had the same dialogue so many times, you know, and I've seen it go a couple different ways. But what's cool about it is you put yourself in the position with this, you know, company with your brother, and it had been your dad's, and now you got some really good options to blow this thing up, like hitting your 100. I mean, you're in a great market in Chicago to really execute there. I mean, what you got? We know the big player is up there too. And
oh yeah,
not so sure you can knock that off, because I think there's a little more involved to that than maybe we know.
Yeah, and my most respect to those guys too. You know. Not trying to, you know, what Mike Tyson say? Everyone has a plan to get hit in the face.
Everybody has a plan to get punched.
Not trying to get punched in the face anytime soon.
That's probably a good plan. Yeah. Why not? Somebody mess with it.
But think about, you know, this whole line of questioning. Warren Buffett is probably credited to be one of the greatest businessmen of all times, but he'll tell you he can't run a business, right? You know, he's the architect that who put it together, which sounds like, which was more what you were at, right? You were the architect that put this thing together. You know, and I just want to throw it out for the group of listeners here. You don't have to be the president. You don't have to be the boss. You could just be the owner. And there's probably a lot of people out there that can do it a lot better than you. Not you specifically, but there's people that you can do a lot better than you. Driving a business forward and may have a longer term, better outcome for the stakeholders, meaning the shareholders and your employees. And then you can set the tone. You say, okay, you want your frontline people to be more professional what would you say actually, would you actually say about your frontline people?
I really want my frontline people to be, you could use the word more professional. I think that's fair, but I don't remember exactly what I said. I might've went off on it. Sometimes I just go off on a tangent. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, you want them to thrive and grow and have a great opportunity. So you just make that directive to your new management team. I mean, look, I'm involved in these private equity deals and have been in many times. That's how they look at it. I put the talent with the right credentials, with the right track record in the right places. I put it with the capital. We put it with our experience, we put the guardrails on it, and we go. So I guess what I'm saying is, you're in a great place here. You got a lot of options, so be careful that you pick the right one.
Yeah, that's probably, and so if you were to ask what keeps me up at night, it's making sure that we're positioning the bit, because really it comes down to positioning the business to continue to be successful and whatever that looks like. And that's probably the one thing that keeps me up. And so that's why it's like some self-reflection of my own leadership ability. But also I want to make sure that we do what's best for the company and the people within the company and in our community. We're a big community people as well. So.
Now, given the size that you're at, do you guys have a tech training type of, like, what are you doing for staffing to kind of support this growth that you guys are doing?
So we'll jump on the bandwagon here. So, you know, I've learned a lot from some of the greats, especially at the RhinoX conference. Mm-hmm. And it's good to hear great things like that reinforce what you're already thinking. And so we're working on a training facility. So we're building about a 2,500 square foot building specific for just training. Just, you know, the technical ability or the soft ability, however that might look like. We already do the weekly trainings with all departments from a soft perspective. We do the reinforcement on the technical, but really how can we start to take technicians coming out of trade school, and I think Ken said it best earlier, more of a polishing school is a great way to think of it.
Yeah, finishing school.
Or a finishing school, yeah. Sorry about that. I want to polish them up, but finishing is, it sounds way better as a finishing school as well.
So that's already in place, like you're moving forward with that?
Yeah, it should be done by the end of the year.
So do you have like a trainer or somebody that you've got that's going to take that and run with it? Like, how's that going to go down?
Yeah, I don't know. We're just going to wave a wand, throw some money at. No, I'm kidding. We have a pretty comprehensive plan on how we're going to do it. So we have a partner with one of our best practice groups. They have a technical training that we're going to implement, and then we'll go ahead and add our soft training to it. And we already kind of have an extensive plan, I guess.
What best practice group is that?
Nextar. Yeah.
Do you, Did you connect with Chad Peterman when you were at Rhino X?
Yeah. Yeah, I met with Chad about a month prior to that as well, down at his facility.
Oh, I was going to say, because that's probably like, I mean, you guys are pretty, like, he's kind of just left where you're going.
Yep. Chad's awesome. Yeah, he's a good guy.
Cool. Good. Well, obviously, like, that's always a question I'm always asking. Before you and I even, you know, we all were on the phone talking about a partnership, that was one of the questions I asked was, what do you have to support what you're asking us to do, you know, alongside you guys? But I was glad that you came on here to ask him questions and kind of push on him a little bit too, because it's been fun having sat through so many of these conversations just to kind of see where people's heads are at. I think what happens too is, and you know more than me, KG, is people don't actually really understand what all the options are. Like, yes, you have, but like, there's lots of variations. Whether you use the Chris Hoffman approach of, you know, of the whole evergreen model, if you're going private equity, if it's, you know, you decide to sell out completely, if you're going to roll equity, there's lots of options that you have. I probably learned more in the last 2 years than I ever thought I wanted to know or would know about private equity and like how the partnerships work enough to where it's like, I mean, you know this, Ken, because you and I are pretty close. Like, even, you know, people throw stuff at me all the time, and I've never even like really considered it because I didn't know enough to understand what it really meant. But I've heard a lot of great success stories. You know, I've also heard a lot. You know, I would say you hear some, not the one or two or three that maybe didn't go the way they were planned, and then that throws shit all out of whack. Like, everybody takes that as like, it's it. Instead of all these positive case studies, it's this little one. Now, one of the most, I can't remember if it was you, if you asked me right before this podcast, you know, what were my favorite podcasts I've ever done? I said two of them. One was with Jens Pulver, which you met Jens at Rhino X, the first Rhino X. And the second one was what? Do you remember?
I don't. It's that ADHD. You said something, squirrel saw nut, you know.
Second one was the one I did with Ken on his transformation podcast. Yep. He was talking about, like, you know, just that was a pretty pivotal moment in your life when we had that podcast. And you're kind of talking about, you know, when, like, Dunk, which, by the way, Dunk's sitting here. Duncan, what's up, my man? He's like, is this thing over yet? It's like, yeah, I heard about my dad. Jesus, it's my face on the side of that van. But you just kind of talked about how it impacted your, you know, like your life, and then that whole transformation that you went through, and like some of the things that you might have done differently. Well, you guys didn't come up the same, like the way he started his business, and you talked about you had $800, and you finally, by the way, that was a brilliant way to end off a ACA panel, was to throw that out there. Yeah. Well done. But the point I'm getting at with it is, like, maybe you just don't really understand all the potential options to build what you want to build. I'm still learning these things. It's just cool that you guys have put yourself in that position. But I will also say, there's, because of the market that you're in, you didn't even got to leave that market to try and get close to that number. You know what I mean? Like, you're in a phenomenal market for it. So we've had a lot of success there over the years too, with some companies too. I've been in that market a long time. You know, I haven't started the business. But I always look at, like, what are you trying to do to support the growth? The same thing, because that has to be a plan. So you have the tech training stuff that you're going to start to implement. But there's still some guys that listen to this podcast, and I would say probably a big majority of them, who can't do that. Like, what were you doing before that to try and bring people in?
Yeah,
great. They don't have those resources, the money, the training, the facility, like those things. They're just still trying to get like somebody.
Yes. So we did. I mean, before we had anything, we would go to employees' houses and we would say, hey, don't worry about paying. Just pay for the material costs, and we're going to do some training at your house. Like, because, you know, employee might come and say, hey, you know what, my furnace isn't working. Cool. That's awesome. We're going to send one of our technicians there and the trainer with them, or a supervisor, just someone that has more technical experience than what that technician has. We're going to send them there, and they're going to, you know, they're going to repair it. They're going to learn. They're going to do all this great stuff. So that's kind of where we started. That was, I mean, when we were 2.5 million, we weren't big, you know, we didn't have those resources. As we kind of continue to grow over the last 2 years, we put three live furnaces and airs in, like, the back room where no one ever goes, and it's dungy and no one likes it, but hey, it's training. And we did that, and we created like bug boxes and stuff where, you know, a supervisor or manager can go ahead and set default codes, and then they would have to try to, you know, diagnose it. So at first we didn't have, I mean, back to, you know, similar to Ken, when in 2016, my dad had asked my mom to borrow money to make payroll. Like, we didn't have a lot of pay. Things were not shiny in 2016, and there were some financial challenges there. So, you know, you don't have to have money to go to do a free service for an employee to do training, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
What's next for you guys? Like, I know you guys are currently HVAC and plumbing. Like, is electrical, like, even visible? Is it down the road? Is it even a thing? Is it, like, situational? Oh, like, is it on the radar?
Yeah, so right now we're getting sewer off the ground. What was it? Anything underneath $1 million a month is a hobby.
Half a million.
Just a hobby. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a hobby. So we're hobbying sewer right now. Our install manager, Cody, he's my brother as well. And, when we were coming up here, we were driving my brother's car and talking with Cody. I said, if you can do $2 million in sewer and $1 million in electrical, I'll buy you whatever car you want. So, and then the purpose is because he's been on me about getting this Ford Lightning, which I think it's an electrical truck. I'm not sure. And I said, I will buy your electrical truck if you get electrical off the ground and sewer going in the right direction. So it's on our radar. I would say not on the radar this year. Sure. We might start to staff it. And that's how we kind of got into plumbing is we staffed some skilled plumbers. And then we went for the licensing. And then we went for the rebrand. So it'll probably be similar on the electricals. We'll start to staff for it a little bit, and then you know, there's more to it than that, but yeah, it's on our radar probably next year.
Okay.
Now let me ask this. Why? Why did you decide to go on a new trade before your first trade wasn't a market leader?
Great question. For me, it was a financial reason and a supportive reason. So for the heating and cooling trade, plumbing supports heating and cooling. And we already had the call. So we did call tracking. Like, how many plumbing calls were we getting a day to see what the demand already looked like? And then how can we help support it from heating and cooling? And so it was just lost revenue. And I like to diversify. I don't like all my income coming, all my eggs in one basket. So really it was for me is we continued to grow what I realized from 2.5 to, let's just say, and it all went within a few years, so we're moving quickly here, is I realized that our peaks were getting higher and our lows were getting lower. We were profiting higher in peak months, and we were losing a lot of money in low-hanging months. And so,
because you had a bigger staff.
Because we had bigger staff, yeah. We were driving more trucks, more installs, all that fun stuff. But we had that overhead expense in the lower months. So really it was about diversifying our income, or really how can we generate more gross profit dollars to support the business so that it's not as, you know, we're not budgeting lost months. It's more of how can we break even in these months. So it was about diversifying our portfolio more, and the demand was already there. So it made sense for us, if that makes sense. So.
Are you satisfied?
Well, I'll say this. I know everybody wants to rush and do plumbing. I don't know why I get so excited about plumbing, but my tact has been, hey, let's have a rock solid HVAC business before we try to add another trade. And I got to tell you, plumbing is a different trade than air conditioning. It is not a completely transferable thing. I mean, really the only thing that's really similar is that they drive trucks to the house, but it's a different trade. It's a different labor force. They look at it differently. The pricing and the think about how things go is different. It's a little more complicated because there's more pieces and parts. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a just plug and play thing. So some guys struggle, you know, when they make that switch. Now, Nextar has great systems. So if you stick to the systems and you implement them, you got a pretty good chance of getting implemented and moving forward. But my mantra has always been, get the business to a really rock solid place in your first trade, whether it's plumbing or air first, before you start venturing into the other trades. Sounds like you're making it work.
Yeah, and I 100% agree with that, because just in reflection, I was like, oh yeah, one of the mistakes I've made was our endeavors into plumbing. And one thing I would have done differently is looked at the options of going into plumbing and not just organic. I think there's better options than the route we took. I think I lost a few years of my life, like emotionally and physically, from getting into plumbing, because it was just a lot of additional stress on top of COVID. And all
and,
that
and
stuff.
I'll tell you this, at $2.5 million in plumbing, I know you think you may be making money at it. It depends how you allocate the overhead, right? But that's not a lot to start covering the indirect costs and some of the extra overhead you really have to have for the business. And again, most people don't pick that up. You know, at one point in my career, I had a job at ARS, and I went through and I started looking at all the businesses, and I departmentalized all the financial statements, and I found that the branches that were HVAC led by an HVAC team or person, the HVAC made money and the plumbing didn't. If it was led by a plumbing guy, the plumbing made money, the HVAC didn't. And, you know, once we departmentalized the financials and started driving the results on both sides, they both came up and lifted, and we pulled it all together. But it is, I just want to make sure everybody understands, as we're talking about that, you did make it sound very, very easy, but it's something that you have to have a delicate walk through to make sure you execute well, or you can be spinning your wheels for a lot of years.
Yeah, and to piggyback on that, because I didn't even think about it, is, you know, when we were at that $2.5 million level, things that were key to us was starting to learn our financials, right? Like you're talking about departmentalizing, classing your accounting system, and really starting to identify what are our key chart of accounts that we want to have on our P&L. And really one area that I missed, but I've learned since, is to really focus on the balance sheet too. So like 2.5 to 5 was a huge focus on cleaning up the financials, making sure that you knew what your percentages of material and labor were. And then really what was really fundamental for us, and I say this because I want to make sure that it's captured for all the other, you know, 2.5 to 5, 5 to 7.5, is what really helped us was starting to focus on operational at $5 million. So we're like a $4 million company. I'm all excited. I'm going to this Nextar marketing workshop. I'm like, all right, I'm ready to spend some money, do some cool stuff, maybe get on TV or radio or whatever it was. And I walk in, and the first thing they said is, well, what are you doing with the calls you already have? And I, like, scratch my head. I'm like, crap. That's a really good point. So I, like, run back to the shop. So, like, from 5 to 7.5, we're, like, super focused on operational KPI, starting to say, like, what are we doing with the call? Like, what are we doing when the phone rings? Let's start there. And I'll go ahead and openly admit we're not the best at it today. But what are we doing when the... Yeah. We've got new partners in town. Rhino. Give that shout out for you. But what are we doing when the phone rings? And we're super good at execution operationally. So really that was really fundamental for us. And I want to make sure that's captured here is, you know, getting clear on what your financials look like and then making educated financial decisions on where you got to go. Start to look at gaps. How am I operating? What am I doing with the calls when the tech's there? What is, you know, am I running a lot of warranty calls? And that really elevated our business as well.
Hey, by the way, Chris, if you delivered a $50 lead to one of your clients, delivered mean to his phone switch, going through all of the dilution points, what is typical that costs a lead by the time it shakes out to a job?
So I would call that a customer acquisition, because it's gotten past the booking rate.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's gotten booked. Oh God. Pending on the company, sophistication of it.
Well, give me the range.
I mean, you'd say that $50 probably end up in the $200 range. Yeah. So it does depend.
200 typical or 200 worst case?
I would say 200. Upper medium.
I was thinking best case.
No.
I mean, 200 is not so bad all the way to the end. But I will say, you know, I've seen them delivered at 50 and end at 500.
100%.
And there's so much that goes on. So to your point, like that's one of our staple items. I don't spend a dime more in lead gen until their metrics are firing where they need to be, because you're just going to, it's like airflow, right? you know, the more velocity you push through ducts, the losses become exponential, right? Same thing.
Exactly.
Hey, so do you remember when I was talking at the at my breakout about the gap?
Yep.
Not the gap that you shop at, Baby Gap, but the gap between marketed leads and closed revenue. So you weren't sitting in there, but that's kind of where, like, what you're talking about is what I'm talking about. We spend the majority of our time with businesses that have kind of maybe gotten past that 5 million in that gap. Even when you get like 200 million, there's still so much to find in that gap that can be tweaked before you spend a dollar more on anything that can help, you know, with the bottom line, all these things. So you getting in the cadence of doing all those things early on will certainly going to be helpful. Dude, I'm excited for you. Congratulations on what you guys are building. You know, I appreciate you sharing, you know, kind of being vulnerable enough to, you know, to share some of the things that you've learned. And I think there's so much like strength and confidence in that vulnerability. You know, some people look at it as a weakness. I look at that as the exact opposite. Self-aware maybe is the right word to use. But that's the type of thing that will keep you from getting in your own way as you continue to grow the business. And you clearly have a lot of good opportunities, you know, and ahead of you, and just options in the business and everything. So,
and you 10x the business without Grant Cardone.
Oh man,
all by yourself.
You know what? That just comes from input, right? Your input is your output, and so like the more hours you, and it wasn't easy, right? Is you know, and a lot of owners might find themselves too of working 60, 70 hours a week, and your input does directly relate to your output of what you can do. And going back to maybe some of our conversation earlier in reflection is there's easier ways to do things. You just got to find the right channel to find it. So that might be, partnering with outside investors. It might be going to ACCA events or joining a best practice groups, but there's easier ways to do things and the answer's out there. I think I said this to you earlier when the old saying, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear in front of them. So really just understanding what you don't know, I guess.
Well, you know how you're going to 10X your business this next time around, right?
I do. Partner right there.
That's how you're going to do it, right there. All right, man. Listen, I appreciate you guys coming on here. Hey, KG, thanks for taking the time out. I know you have many suitors out there that want to go and talk to you and get some Ken Goodrich time.
You're the sexiest suitor today.
You ever get sick of that? You got to get sick of that. Come on, Doc. You know you're getting sick of that shit. I get sick of it. With all due respect. Seriously, man, I appreciate hopping on here and KG taking the time and asking questions. I mean, listen, like this is like one of the rawest conversations we had. It kind of derailed a little bit, which is what I love whenever every time you get Ken involved, just because like you can see when he starts firing on a different cylinder and coming at you, but it's coming from like a place of like genuinely caring and trying to be helpful and things like that. So, which is what I love. But congrats, man, to you, your brothers, like your family, like the whole deal is pretty badass. I'm excited to be able to have a partnership with you guys and when we get things launched and kind of see where it goes. And yeah, I mean, I think if you would, because I know we have a lot of listeners that have kind of are in that like say $5 to $20 million range that might want to reach out to you and connect. What's the best way they can contact you? Why don't you give them your cell phone number? I'm kidding.
I'll do that. No, so I am the worst email person ever. So
text?
Yeah, definitely. Text or Facebook. So my cell phone's 815-830-0113. So I'd say either shoot me a text. I'm a big texter. I'll respond pretty quickly. Or I'm a typical millennial. You can also Facebook me. So
Facebook. Yes. You want to FaceTime me?
I don't do FaceTime. Yeah. Hey,
now that you gave out your number, you're going to have 79 PE groups calling you on your cell phone.
That's all right.
So you know what's coming.
Yeah.
Here you go.
They're like, hey, did you hear Ken's advice? He said to FaceTime him. You hear that? That's the sales tactic. He said FaceTime him. I'm a millennial.
Oh, man. I'm getting right over here. I'm getting the hot seat.
Oh, boy. You got it. Well, listen, man, I appreciate you so much coming on here, and again, sharing the story. And I wish you guys a bunch of success. Clearly, you're going to have it, too. So I want to go ahead and finish this podcast off like I always do, listeners, with just a quick review, and then we'll check out. Unless you have any parting words you want to share.
Well, let me say this.
That's a yes.
All right. I'm going to share the story real quick that I told earlier this morning, right? So 1990. I was on my last $800 and I was struggling. I didn't know quite what I was going to do about business, thinking about throwing in the towel. and I'm looking through a trade magazine and I see the ACK convention in San Antonio. And I had just enough money to go. So I went, and I went to the ACK convention, said, this is my last ditch. I'm going to see if I can learn something, find something at that place. And I'm there, and I meet a few guys, and they start to help me. And they're sharing ideas. And I start to pick up some things that I didn't know, or I start to answer some questions that I had needed the answers to. And I had a great time at the ACA Expo and learned all kinds of things and regained my excitement for the business and created contacts that helped me get through it. So what I'd like to say about it is ACA was the first kind of best practice group, and they set all the standards of which we do everything in our trade by. ACA did. And so ACA and ASHRAE. But I think anybody who is in the air conditioning business just needs to be part of ACA, just to be close to the tools, close to the fundamentals of the trade that we do. And they, not to mention, they have other attributes like their best practice, I mean, their mixed groups and some other things that they, classes that they have that really can help you. You outside, there's other best practice groups that offer other different types of training and things that you that can use, like Nexstar is a little more specific and they have great business systems that you've implemented too, but you see the thing like I have where you need both, right? You really need a trade background if you're going to be great at this trade, at this business. You got to understand it is a technical business, and you also need the business side, the lead generation, lead conversion, and client fulfillment sides. So,
got it.
ACA.
Got it.
That was my ACA. That was my ACA plug. And obviously you agree because you're here too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's where it started for me, was ACA forums. Like, you know, what's the best software out there? Where, you know, what's the best best practice group? So it's really, ACA is really fundamental, and I couldn't agree more. So
yeah.
Well, and since we are live at ACA Conference 2022, that was a perfect ending, Ken.
I know what I'm doing.
He's a professional. All right, listeners, hopefully you guys enjoyed this message. I'm going to go ahead and finish with the review, and we're going to get the heck out of here. This review is from Jose Mina, Texas, TX, assuming that means Texas. This guy, five stars, priceless education. Five stars. These guys are always putting content out and delivering every week. Not only do I get nuggets, but you guys make my drive time easy and entertaining. Thank you, Chris. That's very thoughtful of you. I appreciate that much.
Where's mine?
Where's
my review?
Clearly, this wasn't the podcast that you were on. So they listened to one of the other, you know, five that you're not on. So, hey, whoever that is, thank you so much for those reviews. And obviously, listeners, maybe love those reviews. Keep leaving them. And listen, you have Ken on this podcast. You heard him. Like, he's feeling bad for himself that he wasn't mentioned in the review. So go ahead and leave one, and then I'll read that one on the next podcast. Fair enough?
Whatever star you give, read it out.
I got it.
I'll take it.
All right, perfect. All right, until next time, we'll see you guys. You don't have to go and do everything, but do something. No 0 days. Listeners, thank you so much again for listening to this podcast week after week. We are extremely grateful. Again, the whole purpose of this podcast is to give back to the home services industry that we love so much, whether you're a Rhino or not. We really, really appreciate all the subscribers. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please go in and subscribe, and you'll get all the episodes sent to you automatically weekly. Also, we have really enjoyed your feedback. It's so meaningful for us when we get to read the nice comments that you guys put, so keep doing that. And if you don't know how to do it, here's what you got to do. You search for To The Point Home Services on Apple Podcasts. You click on our profile, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and hit write a review, and be honest, and share your story and how the podcast has impacted you and your business. Thanks again from the bottom of our hearts at To The Point Home Services Podcast. We appreciate you.